Welcome this morning. We are so happy to be together to glorify our Christ, worship our Heavenly Father. Appreciate the opportunity to do this on such a beautiful day. Christ came into this world to bring grace and truth. He is the light of the world. Satan tries to impose darkness on us, to allow us to try to get to see things his way, I should say, to blind us from what is real, to cause us to believe things that are untrue and not right. Paul will write in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 3 that even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them. Christ is a glorious light. Satan brings darkness and illusion into this world. And it's that we'd like to talk about this morning, unmasking the illusions of our culture. And there are a lot of them. The modern world in which we live does a good job of making things appear to be other than they are. The realities of life are disguised often by the trappings of such things as wealth, medical science, political correctness. This lesson this morning, we'll look again at some of the illusions that we face day by day as Christians in this world. And we'll look at what the Bible has to say about the reality of these things. Try to unmask the illusions that Satan spreads around us through the darkness that he brings. So to begin with, I want us to think about unmasking the illusion of influence, of affluence, I should say. Affluence is wealth. And the truth is that we are all materially wealthy. All of us are. That's not an illusion. We are materially wealthy. I cited this statistic before, but in our country, Americans below the poverty line are still wealthier than 80% of the people in the world. It gets to me sometimes when I hear our politicians talk about, you know, how we, the one percenters, you know, these exceptionally rich people, and all of our problems are supposed to be that blamed on the one percenters because they're not paying enough of their fair share of taxes and all of that sort of thing. But the truth is that worldwide, every American is a 20 percenter. We are just that wealthy. And the poorest person in this auditorium this morning is wealthier than 20%, than 80%, I should say, of the people in the world. That's mind-boggling, isn't it? By that standard, we are all wealthy from a material standpoint. Think about the story of the rich young ruler. What was his problem? Well, his love of riches. But it sort of set me to thinking. No matter how much wealth he had, and he's described as being rich, Jesus told him to sell his possessions, give to the poor, and come and follow him. And the rich young ruler went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. But no matter how much he had, the rich young ruler never rode in a car. He never had surgery. He never knew what it was to turn on a light, warm up something in the microwave, use penicillin, listen to the radio, watch TV, wash dishes in a washing machine or even under running water, use a computer, type a letter, mow a lawn, fly in an airplane, sleep on an inner spring mattress, talk on a cell phone. If he was rich, what am I? I preached lessons on the problems that wealth presents in times past, and actually had somebody comment after the lesson was over, well, we're not wealthy here. Yeah, we are. From a material standpoint, we are. But the illusion is, that Satan tries to deceive us with, the illusion is that material wealth is real and lasting and that it's all that matters. and that if you're materially wealthy, you are really wealthy. And that is just not the case. Material wealth is not real wealth. Listen to what Jesus said to the church at Laodicea in Revelation chapter 3 and verse 17. He said, because you say, I am rich and have become wealthy. See, that was their thinking. Well, we've become wealthy. And so we have need of nothing. He says, you do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. You think you're wealthy, but you don't have anything that's of any value. The problem with the church at Laodicea, if I were just to ask you that this morning, if I were to ask you, what was the problem with the Laodicean church? Most of you would say, well, they were lukewarm. That's right. What did that mean? Well, it meant that they weren't excited about serving the Lord. Not really. Lukewarm, as it's defined by Jesus in the very passage, lukewarm was this idea that we've got everything we need materially, and so that's all that's important, and we just don't need much spiritually. And so they were so involved in the material things of this world, in getting and having those things, that real spiritual wealth didn't mean anything to them. In Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 7, the wise man said that there is one who makes himself rich, yet he has nothing. And one who makes himself poor and has great riches. It all depends on how you value things. And material wealth, in an absolute sense, is not truly eternally valuable. It will not last. James writes in James chapter 5 and verse 1, come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches are corrupted. Your garments are moth-eaten, your gold and silver are corroded, and their corrosion will be a witness against you and will eat your flesh like fire. You have heaped up riches in the last days. So James is basically saying the wealth that you're relying on is not going to last. It's not going to be there for you when the end of your days come. And in fact, the way you've accumulated it and used it is going to condemn you. Had an interesting experience a couple of weeks back. I was holding a meeting down in Mount Olive on the north side of Birmingham. And after services were over that evening, I was about to drive back home. There was a Hardee's right there at the interstate, and I decided to go in and get iced tea to sip on the way home. And I went in, and a man came in with two young boys. I don't know if he was their dad or what, but he was very, very talkative. And I had my tie and everything on, and he said, oh, you must be one of those rich fellows. And I said, no, I'm a preacher. I'm not really all that rich as far as you would consider it. But we got to talking about material wealth. And he said he had just heard this illustration from his preacher. So I don't know if it's a true illustration or not, but here's the story that he told me. He said a guy living in this town, he was fairly poor and he didn't have nice clothes to wear to church. And, funeral home in this particular town actually had a bunch of suits that they had ordered to dress corpses in who didn't have nice clothes to wear to be put in the coffin. So they had all of these suits, and whoever owned the funeral home decided to give this poor gentleman some suits. And apparently they were very nice. I've never heard of this going on before, but apparently they were very nice. But the man discovered that there was only one problem with the suits. Can you guess what it was? No pockets. They didn't put pockets in suits that are designed for people that are going in caskets, because you can't take it with you. What are you going to put in your pockets? You can't take it with you. Material wealth is not lasting wealth. And that's why its value, while it has some value, is extraordinarily limited. You can use it for good things in this world, to be sure. But it's not what matters in this world. James will say in James chapter 1, verse 11, that no sooner has the sun risen with a burning heat than it withers the grass, its flower falls, beautiful appearance perishes. so the rich man also will fade away in his pursuit. It's just not what matters. Jesus said, Luke chapter 12 and verse 13, he was asked from the crowd this question. He says, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." So here a man comes and says, I've got a brother. He's not being honest, fair, in dividing up the inheritance. And Jesus said to the man, "Who made me a judge or an arbiter over you?" He said to them then, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things which he possesses." And so, let me encourage you this morning, let your conduct be without covetousness and be content with such things as you have. Give to those who are in need. Use the material things that you have to lay up treasure in heaven, not for yourself. God has promised, "I will never leave you or forsake you. He'll be with you in this life." Don't rest your hopes on your material possessions. Rest them on the God of heaven. In our country, as I said, we are wealthy. The wealthiest country that has ever been. People come from other countries, almost any other country, just with very few exceptions, and are astounded at the way Americans can live. We are so very blessed. The illusion is that it's real and it's lasting and it's all that matters. And we need to see right through that. We have also the illusion of independence in our culture today, of self-sufficiency, if you will. Our affluence has led to a related illusion, and that is that we think that we can make it on our own, that we have no need of anybody else, and particularly we have no need of God. We are not, however, self-sufficient. First of all, we are so interdependent on one another that it's hard to even describe it in terms that we can fully grasp. But some of our most accomplished humans have realized their interdependency on other humans. Albert Einstein once said, "Many times a day I realize how much my inner and outer life is built upon the labors of my fellow man, both living and dead, and how earnestly I must exert myself in order to give in return as much as I have received." We all are dependent on one another in so many ways. We think that in our modern age we have achieved so much and we are so much smarter and further along than those who come before us. And we need to recognize, however, that if we see any further and have gone any farther, it's because we are standing on the shoulders of giants who came before us. We owe a lot to others who've enabled us to enjoy the lives that we live today. In our culture, sometimes there is a war between the genders, and women see themselves as completely dependent, or want to see themselves as independent, I should say, from men. And men want to see themselves as independent from women. However, we are interdependent. 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 11, Paul says, "Neither is the man independent of the woman, or the woman independent of man in the Lord. For as woman came from the man, even so man also comes through the woman. All things are of God." I want you to listen to everything he says there. Men and women need each other. God created us, created woman for man. We're made for one another. And the human unit doesn't function without both genders. But besides our interdependency, what Paul also said in that passage is that all things are from God. All things are from God. And we are all dependent on Him. There is really no such thing, is there, as self-sufficiency then? There's really no such thing as that. The Apostle Paul will write in Romans chapter 14 and verse 17, "None of us lives to himself." None of us lives to himself. We are all part of something bigger than ourselves. We are all interconnected. Ultimately, our sufficiency is from God. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 17, Moses reminded Israel that they needed to remember what God had done for them in bringing them up out of the land of Egypt and in providing for them all of the way in the wilderness wandering. Lest they would say in their hearts that my power and the might of my hand has gained me this wealth when they enter into the promised land. They needed to remember that God had provided all of these things, and we need to remember today that we are not sufficient of ourselves to think of anything as being from ourselves, but our sufficiency is from God. Paul writes that in 2 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 5, and he's talking about his ability to be a preacher of the gospel, but it applies to so many things. Our sufficiency is from God. America, our culture, has bred this spirit of independence, and we are rapidly losing that, by the way, I think. But I'm not sure that spirit of independence was always altogether that good. This spirit that we seem to be developing of having to rely on government for everything is also not that good. We're going from one extreme to the other. We need to see that we all are interconnected and that God is the one who blesses us and enables us to live as we do. We are not independent from Him. And then there is in our culture the illusion of neutrality. We're led to believe that we can stay neutral on moral issues. In fact, that we should stay neutral on moral issues. The media has presented us a view of the world that it claims is objective and neutral. Science tells us that to discover truth, you have to maintain objectivity and neutrality. So we're led to believe that we can be neutral on moral issues. Dante in the Divine Comedy wrote that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who in time of great moral crisis maintain their neutrality. And I know Dante wasn't inspired, and I don't necessarily believe everything that he said, but he was dead on in making that statement. Not sure he knows where the hottest places in hell are either. But he knows this. He knew this. And in times of moral crisis, righteous me cannot maintain neutrality. I will tell you something, brothers and sisters. It's being whitewashed in our culture today, and we've talked a lot about it in sermons. We've had visiting preachers talk about it over the last couple of years. But what is going on in our culture is a moral, or should I say an immoral, revolution right now. And the generation that is young now, if they reach old age, we'll look back at this time period right now that we're going through in the last decade or so and what's about to happen as the time when America entirely lost its moral compass. What we're seeing with gay marriages, homosexual marriages, that not only being accepted, but encouraged and applauded more and more and really forced on people. And people who try to stand up for what's true. What we're seeing about abortion. More and more practiced in our culture. And anybody who says anything about it is demonized, fired from their jobs, as I read not too long ago, just recently, in a news story. And it's getting worse and worse and worse, and it's day by day by day. And the media wants us to believe, our culture wants us to believe, oh, don't say anything, just ride the flow, let it happen. It's, you know, be on the right side of history. The only people who are ever going to be on the right side of history are the people who stay with God's Word, because when history ends, He's going to judge all of history by His Word. And the right side of history is God's side. We cannot be morally neutral. Not taking a stand is taking a stand. In Luke 11 and verse 23, Jesus said that he who is not with me is against me. You hear that? He who is not with me is against me. And he who does not gather with me scatters. I sang that great song this morning based on what Joshua said to the people in Joshua 24 verses 14 and 15. You have to choose. It's either this or that. It can't be both. It can't be everything's okay. Joshua was telling the people they had to choose between the gods of the land, the gods of their fathers, which their fathers had served beyond the river, I should say, the gods of the Amorites in which land, in whose land they dwelt, or the God of heaven. And if he says, if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. You have to make a choice and you have to take a stand. And this illusion that we can be morally neutral and everything's going to be okay is a lie of the devil. He's blinding people's minds. And I'm so concerned for our young people today. I think we've got some wonderful young people today who by and large understand what's going on. We've got to stand up. We've got to stand up and be counted in these moral fights that are going on in our culture. And then in our culture today, there's an illusion of immortality. I understand that human beings are in fact immortal, but we're not going to live forever here. But there is this illusion that we are going to live forever here. The illusion is that time is not really catching up with us. That somehow medical science is going to enable us to just live on and on and on indefinitely. And that death is not something that we're going to have to deal with. A plastic surgeon said one time that a face lift would make a person 10 years younger. Really? Somebody gets a facelift, they might look 10 years younger, but you know what? They're the same age they were to begin with. And you can take all of the vitamins and eat all of the health food and avoid all of the bad things that you're not supposed to eat and do your exercises every day of all different kinds and you know, follow all the health advice that's out there and go to your medical doctor and get a thorough checkup once a year and take all the pills you're supposed to take and all that sort of thing. And you know what's going to happen to you? You are going to die. The Lord doesn't return first. But the idea in our society is we can just be young and live forever. The statistics are these. In America, 1 out of every 100 people die by the age of 15. 5 out of every 100 people die by the age of 45. 32 out of every 100 people die by the age of 75. There is nobody in our land over 150. Our 115-year-old lady had a birthday yesterday. There's a relationship between the illusion of wealth and independence and immortality. Look in your Bibles with me at the 49th Psalm, and let me read several verses for us here. Psalm 49 and verse 6, listen to this. Exactly what we've been talking about. Psalm 49 and verse 6. Those who trust in their wealth and boast in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him. For the redemption of their souls is costly, and it shall cease forever. That he should continue to live eternally, not see the pit. See what it's talking about? Somebody so rich and you can have all the money in the world. It's not going to buy you any more life. It's not going to buy you eternity. And then he goes on and says, verse 10, for he sees wise men die like the fool and the senseless person perish and leave their wealth to others. Their inner thought is that their houses will last forever, their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. Nevertheless, man, though in honor, does not remain. He is like the beast that perish. That's reality. That's the truth. And that unmasked the illusion. The rich fool that Jesus describes in Luke chapter 12 and verse 19, who was, again, such a wealthy individual, had great plans for the future, said to himself, "Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry." God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will these things be that you have provided?" So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. James says in James chapter 4 and verse 13, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there and buy and sell and make a profit." So we make plans for the future and we make plans for our material gain. We expect that we're just going to keep on living to enjoy all of that and that we have the independent choice to do that. Again, all of these things are connected together. But James says, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. What is your life? It's a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. Now your boasting is arrogant. All such boasting is evil. Death comes to all. It is appointed unto man once to die. And after that comes judgment. We have to unmask this illusion that is so prevalent in our culture. There is an Eastern legend about a Hindu woman whose only child had died. And she went to the Hindu holy man, and used that term accommodatively, to ask him for her child back. The man told her to go and obtain a handful of rice from a house into which death had not come. And so she began going door to door and asking, "Is everybody here? Mothers, fathers, children, grandparents, grandchildren?" But in every house she found that somebody had died. And she went about this for a long time and never found a house that death hadn't touched. Now that's reality. In fact, the reality is that thousands of people have died in the time that I've been speaking to you this morning. The mortality rate in the United States for the year 2010 is 0.8%. Basically means that one out of 125 people died that year. There are 250 of us here this morning. Statistics would say that two of us will die this year. On average, somebody dies every 1.8 seconds. That's the truth. The purpose of the lesson has not been, especially here at the end, to be morbid, but it is to be real. And to get ourselves thinking about, no matter what our age, the brevity of life and what's really important in life. We have some people here this morning who are young, who haven't given their lives to Christ. We have some people here this morning who are older, who haven't given their lives to Christ. I suspect that there are some of several different ages who are not right with the Lord at this moment. He could return at any time. But if he doesn't, death will come. And it could come at any time to anybody. You need to be ready. In the end, having a relationship with Jesus Christ, being a child of God, living a life for Him, it's all that's going to matter. It doesn't matter when you die. It doesn't matter how you die. What matters is the condition of your soul when you go to meet your Maker. What's that condition this morning? Make yourself right with God. Fall to stand.